Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Today we are talking about true crime again. We have a great author who's written a true crime memoir, so it's very personal. Thank you for taking the time, Malcolm Campbell.
Thank you very much, Alan. Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Wow. So this is quite the book here you've got. So now the title is really interesting, Call Sign Charlie One.
Yes.
So where did that come from?
When I started working as a security guard, my first department store that I took over, my call sign was Charlie One. So that was the beginning of the true crime story. When I first took on the job, I actually believed I was just going to be helping ladies with their bags and opening doors for people and just being a visual deterrent in my uniform. I had no idea what was about to happen. And and that's where the story starts, Call Sign Charlie One.
Wow. So this is quite the story you've got here. So maybe give a little bit of a preface of a setup of what was going on in your life.
Within work or
just kind of all the way around. Yeah, let's talk about.
Okay.
You know,
okay. So I've been an ex-soldier. I've been a soldier with the British Army, and served proudly. Also served in America, in Fort Lewis alongside the American troops. I'd also served in Africa as well. So after I'd served for about 5 years, I left as a non-commissioned officer and then come back into Civilian Street, where I decided to work as a security guard, falling back on my military training. And I was just a regular family guy with two children and law-abiding, never getting in trouble, you know. Just wanted to serve the public, really, just like I was in the forces.
What made you go to a department store or a retail store?
Yeah, that wasn't my choice. That was my assignment that was assigned to me. by the security company that I ended up joining. This security company was advertised as an elite security company that only wanted like ex-military personnel. So they tended to have contracts in areas that were high crime. So I had to pass an assessment on the mats using martial arts and arrest and restraint techniques. And luckily I passed, and I was given my first assignment of a department store.
I was going to say, so I know kind of what it is in Canada or the U.S. for what they're allowed to do. What kind of things are you allowed to do as security in a store like that? Like, were you allowed to, kind of tackle someone, or kind of what was your sort of?
Well, generally security, security in this country, you have to hold certain licenses to be able to arrest and detain. When I was assessed at the security headquarters, there was a police chief constable there who was assessing the individuals and the arrest and detaining techniques. Because I was ex-military and because I'd had many years experience in martial arts, I was fortunate enough to be one of the three leave the gates with an assignment. So I was commissioned by the police to arrest and detain.
So now, the story goes, I guess it was only like your third day or so that you were on work, and so now, what happened to you?
Yeah, well, I got a call the cosmetic section, and I witnessed a male. I see one male, white male, 6'2", breaking into a cabinet with a screwdriver, trying to steal all the expensive aftershave and perfume within there. I called CCTV. As I did, he gave up and left. Made his way towards the town centre. I was trying to follow him to get eyes on him, and the town was so busy I couldn't see where he was. And then before I knew it, my radio was going crazy with CCTV telling me to withdraw, get back, he's coming at you. I couldn't see him, and before I knew it, he'd thrown me into the plate glass window of a mobile phone shop, where he was repeatedly smashing my head against the window, and giving me a verbal attack and a physical attack that mimicked being inside a cell. And to be honest, it completely scared the life out of me, to be honest.
Well, yeah. So now he was high on cocaine or something at the time.
Yeah.
Too, wasn't he? Crack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. His eyes were massive. The pupils of his eyes were massive, like he'd been on heavy medication or on cocaine. And his strength was unbelievable for his size. And the rage in his face was just awful, to be honest. So I had no doubt, and he was a known crack user as well.
So what ended up happening? Did you end up in the hospital with this one?
No, I didn't. I ended up, I was in shock, to be honest. So I ended up just going into my office and refusing to press charges, and refusing any medical care, saying I was okay. But in all seriousness, I was a wreck inside. That was the truth, yeah.
Was this something that you think was carried on from your time as a soldier?
Emotional?
Yeah, the emotion and all that. Did it trigger something, do you think?
That's interesting. That's an interesting thought. I don't know. I think it was. I'd become a normal civilian. You know, I wasn't in uniform, in army uniform. I wasn't being sent anywhere, like a war-torn area. So I guess I really wasn't expecting my job role to involve being physically attacked in broad daylight in such a way. And I think the shock of it all and not knowing what to do, I think that probably was the worst. Yeah.
Hmm. So what ended up happening after that? How were you? And it, how did it change the way you did your job?
Yeah, well, I was a wreck. I got withdrawn. I was frightened all the time. I was withdrawing away from people. I had become a victim, basically.
Right.
It was very difficult. Yeah, very, very difficult time.
But it says here now that you've achieved over 400 arrests, but you had five assassination attempts.
Yes.
What? Who would be trying to kill you? Just bad people? At the start?
Yeah, criminals that I was trying to detain, or criminals that I had detained had gone to prison and then come out with like a vengeance against me. Yeah.
That's just incredible. How was this for you? Did you get more defensive and more withdrawn as time went on with these things happening, or?
Well, what happened was, is that I was totally a victim for about 4 weeks, and then I ended up responding to an old lady that had been mugged and beaten, and witnessing this and holding her in my arms and seeing what they'd done to her fired the soldier within me, and that stirred an anger towards all of the criminals in the towns and cities that would do these things on innocent people. So then the old me started coming back, the fighter from a young age, that was when I swore my own personal war on the lot of them, basically. So from that day, I hunted them down every opportunity I got, not thinking about myself whatsoever. All I wanted to do was have them arrested and catch them. I became pretty damn good at it, yeah.
Mm. I'm just wondering, so it's almost like a Charles Bronson movie or something. Did you really want to hurt these people? Like, were you that angry?
No, not at all. Not at all. Within my book and the 422 arrests that I had, I only had one accusation of assault, and that was dropped. So out of all those arrests, I would only use restraining techniques to detain them. Even if they were punching me like crazy, I would only put them in an arm lock and twist them and put them on the floor. It was very important for me to stay on the right side of the law. That was really important, because otherwise I wouldn't have been any different from them. So it was important to me to do that. However, inside, sometimes when I got hold of them, when I knew what they'd done, it was challenging for me to, not put unnecessary hurt on them when I was restraining them. But I did manage to do that successfully.
Now, I'm just thinking about this. So, yeah, that was quite a bit of strength on your side not to become violent to people like that, because some of these people tried to kill you. So this is not...
Yeah, sure.
This is not just someone picking up a pack of cards or something. This is serious stuff. So how did this affect your home life without...
Terrible.
Oh, I was going to say, without, you don't have to get too personal. I'm just thinking
about that. No, it's fine.
So what happened there? Like, did you kind of alienate yourself from your home as well?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did, yeah. I've become obsessed. And every ounce of my energy per day was always concentrating and thinking about these criminals and the person that had attacked me. So I'd be in the gym after work, I'd be running, you know, I withdrew from my wife and my children, which probably contributed to the marriage ending. I was very much alone, I didn't feel like I could talk to anyone. I had no counselling, I didn't have any pepper spray or any cuffs or any batons. The beatings that I got were sickening, to be honest, in some of the arrests, because I wouldn't like punch them. You can't do that. You're arresting them. You've got to just restrain them and look after their well-being, you know, making sure their airways are clear, not endangering them. Ironically, they're punching the hell out of you and headbutting you, but you've got to look after their safety, which is a bit crazy. But that's the side of good, I'm afraid. And that's what I was trying to do. But yeah, my personal life, it just went down the toilet completely. And my my emotions inside were depressed, saddening, emotionally vulnerable. My judgment was being tested. You know, it was a very difficult time for me, to be honest. Yeah.
Mm. Do you find that this sort of changed your, let's say your general opinion of people? Like, did this make you start looking for the bad in people? Do you know what I mean? Like, when you start, before, because it sounds like you were kind of surprised. Like, you go to work and you thought, well, you know, I'll be helping some ladies upstairs and with their bags and doors and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, people are trying to kill you, and you got all these arrests and all this violence is going on.
Did that affect
your attitude toward people? Like, were you on defense? Like, you automatically thought, ooh, you know, watch out for this one. Like, I'm just wondering if that sort of changes your outlook on people.
It did. I mean, you know, if you're surrounded by people that are trying to hurt you all the time, you are going to be on the defensive. And you are going to act like overpoweringly, in a manner of speaking. For example, if I would go into my local pub and there'd be some local youths that don't like the police and don't like security, and they'd throw over evil looks at me, you know, I would bark at them, you know, snap at them, you know, so I was kind of like always on the edge always worrying I was going to be attacked, always trying to anticipate and read people. So I guess, yeah, I mean, there wasn't much... I didn't have much enjoyment in this period. It was all quite dark and sinister, to be honest.
Why do you think you never left?
Well, I asked myself that quite a few times. And I think, you know, if you're an ex-soldier and you're in a role where other stores are screaming for your help because there's a criminal that is physically punching them or headbutting them.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The floor, girls, headbutting girls to the floor, and they're screaming for someone to help, and I can be there in 20 seconds. I knew that, I knew that it was almost like I was the best person for the job, if you know what I mean. And I helped a lot of people. I saved a lot of people as well, yeah.
So it sounds like you went down pretty far and ended up with some pretty severe PTSD, according to what I'm reading about your book here.
Right.
And
Well, the irony about the book is there's almost like two storylines. So the storyline of work and the storyline of my private life. Now, I'm a law-abiding guy, you know. I've helped police officers detain people when they've been struggling. You know, I've got no criminal record. I've got no cautions. You know, I've always tried to do the best to protect other people. My personal life, without me seeing it coming, probably due to my wanting a better life and looking at another individual, looking up at another individual, almost like really admiring this person, and becoming friends with him. I had no idea the train wreck that was heading towards me. Going down that path eventually got me to the point where I was coming full circle, where now I wasn't looking at these people that were doing these crimes with the same eyes. I was looking at them thinking that they were someone's son or someone's daughter. Listening in the end, listening to their stories, it changed the way that I looked upon them. And it was only many years later that I decided to write the story, because I wanted to take people on the journey with me so they could see what I saw, and show them the journey I went on, which often meant saying things about myself that I'm not proud of. But that was a dark path that showed me like some truths that are out there that we all often ignore or don't see.
It's funny how your darkest past can become your greatest asset in a way.
Well, I never saw it coming, to be honest, because it's not a script. It's
right.
It's something that happened. So, yeah. I totally agree, yeah.
Do you still find it difficult in moments?
Now? No, not at all. Not at all now. I found it difficult writing it. Oh, God, that was so hard. It was so hard to write it. Sometimes I couldn't do it without crying all the time.
Right.
And then editing it, of course. Becoming a writer was I just thought, you write a story and it's done, yeah? Job done. But no. No, I had no idea, did I? So, that's like, writing the story is like 10%, isn't it? Because you edit it about, like, 10 times, and then you proofread it 20 times, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
And you're reliving it and reliving it and going through it. And I got to the point where I was just, I can't wait till this is published so I don't have to read it anymore. You know, I did get to that point.
Yeah.
I wrote it for Amos. If you read the story, I wrote it for him, and I wrote it for the other people that are trapped in dark times. And I also wrote it because I recognize life is about choices. And sometimes we may make the wrong choice, and something might happen from it. But you can take learning lessons from that can give you wisdom to grow. So that was another reason I wanted to write the book.
How did you find a way out? How did you get yourself through all this?
In the end, it would culminate on detaining Amos, an individual who was very special to me. I don't want to give away too much details about Amos, but he was very important, and I think he changed the path that my life was on. And it was a very powerful moment, and a very upsetting moment. Every time I read the chapter, I'm in tears every single time. And this has been like 19 years ago when this happened. So, excuse me. So, I feel it was almost like I was touched, almost like he was an angel. That reached inside my chest and grabbed hold of my spirit, and he had a trance on me through his eyes, and I could feel all his pain. I was sucked right into him, and there's other details that you read in the chapter about Amos, that are very close and dear to me. And I believe very close and dear to the American public as well, because I know how strongly the American public feel about individuals that serve them. So I would put it down to Amos. After that meeting, it felt like I'd been touched by God or by an angel or by something, because my whole mannerism changed, almost like I'd been through a cleansing after meeting him, and my actions proved that could appear to be correct. Yeah.
Mm. So how is life now? How are things for you now?
Okay, so I'm a single father now of a 7-year-old mermaid and a 8-year-old Pokemon champion. My ex-partner got poorly and couldn't look after my children, so I had to step up and be a full-time dad. So I gave up my job as a head chef of a hotel, and now I do school runs and clean the house and do the bedding and cook and clean and all that lot. And I write in between. So, that's my life now.
Sounds like things are kind of worked out. You're pretty happy.
Yes, I am. I'm very much so. I've got some dear friends that are always on the phone with me, and they support me, I'm in a very good place now, thank you.
So what do you hope people get out of the book? I mean, obviously when you wrote the book, you were speaking to other people in the same place, and you had that darkness yourself that you were working out by writing the book.
Yeah.
Is there a meaning behind this for other people?
There is a meaning. I was a law abiding guy. You know, I was just everyday Joe. You know, I wasn't anyone special, no different from anyone else. I was just a guy trying to do his job. But in my teenage years, you know, I suffered a lot of violence from children in the streets and at school. And I went through a horrible time there. And I'd walked away from that darkness and that anger. And I'd matured and I'd grown. But, you know, when you're faced with horror, you know, being attacked, I wrote in my book that I felt like he was a Rottweiler and I was a bunny rabbit, and he was just shaking me in his teeth. That's how I felt. But, and then the soldier within me woke up, not from that, but from seeing injury towards innocent other people. It seemed that I didn't kind of care too much about myself, but I cared about everyone else. I was in service of others. And when I saw others being attacked, then that made me angry. So then I went on the path of revenge, which is never good. it will never come out in a happy ending, going down the route of revenge. So that's one thing I want people to know, is don't do what I did. You know, that's not a good thing. But of course, so I turned into a Rottweiler and ended up inadvertently in my social life walking a similar path to what they were walking, not stealing, but then again, not being a good citizen, and that's something I'm deeply regretful of. But I guess the book shows that even good people can go wrong, or make a wrong choice or a poor choice, or maybe for the right reasons, but inevitably, or he thinks there are the right reasons, or she. But also, a lot of the public look at these individuals, and maybe if they're homeless, or maybe if they're using drugs under a bridge, you know, look at them with disgust and everything, you know.
Mm.
I think more, and I was hoping that this book, they would come with me, and they would look at them in this certain way, and then I was kind of hoping at the end they might be looking at them with different eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, society tends to dehumanize people in those situations.
Yes. Like, the truths are okay as long as it's a truth they like or want to hear.
Mm.
But sometimes there's truths in dark places, and sometimes it takes people, good people, to stand up and say, I've been in that dark place, to show them a certain story that perhaps they will open their ears to.
Mm. So, how do people get a hold of you? Do you have, what kind of a page do you have for people to contact you?
I have my author's page on Facebook, Malcolm Campbell Author. They can Google me, put Malcolm Campbell Author into Google, and my book, Cool Sign Charlie Wine, and my face, my photo, will come up on there, and that will take them to a link where they can contact me as well.
Okay, we'll have that up on our site too, so anybody Thanks. Listening can just go one click and get your book or find you on Facebook and stuff.
You.
So you're still writing, that's great. So you plan on doing more books?
Yeah, well, in my life I've done many things. I think I'm always going to be a writer about memoir, things that I've done or witnessed or achieved, I think. So I was a chef of French cuisine for many years, and I won several medals in doing that. So I thought about writing a cookery book for people that would like to become a chef and go into the industry. My last hotel was a four-star fine dining and home cooked food. That was a nice place. So I've got potentially a book on cooking to come. There's already other areas as well that I've experienced, there are other topics that I'm considering. I'd like to write about things I'm passionate about, because I think that will hold my drive to complete the book.
Right.
To be honest, you know.
No, it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
And then other people relate to it. They can feel your passion. They get that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a good thing. Everything going good with the COVID and all that over in the UK and stuff? Or?
Well, it has been, but unfortunately, the northeast of England has just gone into lockdown again. With something like 2 or 3 million people being locked down, which is very sad news to hear. So things are still very precarious. We have to wear masks if we're going into any shops, you know, keep our distance when we're collecting children from the school, strict hygiene. You know, so it's still very much a serious state, really. I just try to make life at home as easy for myself and my children as I can, you know, buying gym equipment to keep fit and giving the kids tabs and switches and everything that stops them from fighting each other. Everything's good. I'd like to see the time when we're not concerned about COVID, but it doesn't seem like it's coming just yet.
No, probably a little while still, but, you know, but it could be worse, right?
Yes, of course.
So, well, Malcolm, it's been very interesting. You sound like a great person, and love the book.
Thank you.
So our guest has been Malcolm Campbell, and we've talked about his true crime memoir, The Call Sign Charlie One, I Only Want It to Live in Peace, Now It's My War. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to the both of you. Thank you very much.
Great stuff, Malcolm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.